The story of temptation is old as humanity itself. In fact, we can find temptation throughout the Bible in Adam and Eve, or the temptation of Jesus from Satan when he's in wilderness during the 40 days. Homer's The Odyssey talks about his encounter trying to get home from the Trojan War with an enchantress, and then tempts his crew with her magic that he meets and turns them all into pigs. The Odyssey also faces the temptation of the sirens, whose song lures the sailors to their doom as they go into the water. We have the story of Faust, my favorite, the picture of Dorian Gray. The search for eternal youth and beauty leads to a bargain where he gives every single vice without consequence, but it comes with consequence. All these stories of human nature should have had me know that the experiment that I've been running since the beginning of the school year in my classroom would eventually come to an end. So sit back, grab yourself a cup of coffee or whatever it is that you're into. You're listening to America Emboldened with Greg Bolden. Let's get emboldened.
America Emboldened.
Greg, I feel emboldened.
You don't know the founding fathers. You don't know what they did. You don't know what they sacrificed. We have lost touch with the principles in the Constitution. Nobody's read the Declaration of Independence. You are voting for socialism, and you got what you voted for.
Welcome, Bold Americans, to another episode of America Emboldened. As always, I'm your host, Greg Bolden, both here on the America Out Loud News Network, as well as on patreon.com/AmericaEmboldened. If you have not subscribed to all the various channels out there, please go and subscribe to America Emboldened on YouTube, Rumble, or X at Real Greg Bolden, wherever it is that you like to get your content delivered. That's exactly where you should be. Make sure you click on the subscribe button. It costs you absolutely nothing, because tomorrow I'm going to have a great show for you, a bonus episode on the America Out Loud News Network and all my media channels. I'm going to be bringing you an interview with a co-host that you know very well. My colleague, Dr. Peter McCullough, and I are going to be interviewing Kayla Pollack. Now, Kayla was paralyzed by her third booster shot, which was by Moderna. And we're going to be telling that story and trying to learn from it so we can help others. And perhaps Dr. McCullough can offer some insight to Kayla as well. Truly a tragedy of a story, but you're going to want to hear that. So make sure you tune in, you subscribe to all those channels, or you're on here, AmericaOutLoud.news. While you're over at that website, make sure you check out all my colleagues' work, like Peter McCullough and my good friend Chris Michaels with Unleash the Political News Hour. You don't want to miss that either. Temptation is something that strikes us all from time to time. It's likely the reason that many people have jealousy, while many people's relationships have been ruined. Temptation is also a million and million dollar industry, hand over fist, as they tempt you to buy things with marketing and commercials. And I ran a bit of an experiment in my classroom over the last 5 months. Back in September, I discovered after a class that there was $2 laying on the floor, two single $1 bills. Now, I knew that this would be pretty much absolutely impossible for me to track down exactly who this money belonged to. So what I decided to do was put the $2 up on the board and create a bit of a thought experiment. Now, let me tell you a little about the school that I work at. The school that I work at is a low-income city school, and we have a number of students that are in poverty. We have a number of English language learners, meaning English is not their native language in their house, so they're still learning how to speak English. Many of my students also have come into areas where, because they may have not had the same opportunities as students at schools that are a little bit more higher income and maybe two parents, those students may not have had the opportunity to learn reading at the same level that the rest of society might have had an opportunity. And so many people would imagine that my school would be a lawless, crazy place where it's anarchy, and how could these students get along, let alone how do you function at the school? Well, if that is your ideology behind a low-income, high-poverty school with some gangs and other things tied in, you'd actually be wrong. I work in an absolutely phenomenal school that is challenging, not going to paint a picture that it is not, but each student provides an opportunity and a story that is worthwhile, because I believe, because of the way that I was raised, that every time that I come in contact with anybody is an opportunity to come in contact with something that is a divine person like myself. Now, some people would say that's coming in touch with the face of Christ if you're a Christian. Other people might just acknowledge that in a Buddhist type of mentality that we are all the good stewards for one another and trying to be moral beings and raise one another up, whatever it may be. I just believe that all my students are worthy of being loved and worthy of opportunity, worthy of an education, and that they really deserve to have people that care and listen, that value them as human beings. It doesn't matter what they do when they leave my classroom or what predicament they may find themselves in. Now, many people believe that we're a school that has fights and violence. And yeah, we have fights. I think every public school has fights from time to time. And yeah, it's not always a walk in the park. That all stated, I put the $2 up on my board without telling my students why it was there. Immediately over the next several days, students began asking, "Bolden, what's up on the board? Is that $2? To which I would respond, "Yes. Why do you have $2 up on the board, Mr. Bolden?" And I'd say, "I don't know. I just decided to put it there." To which one student actually said, "Can I have it?" And I said, "Sure, if you feel that it's yours and you need it, I guess you can have it." He goes, "So it's not stealing if I take it?" I said, "Well, it's not stealing, but I'm kind of curious who will take it, how long it will stay." And he's like, "Oh, okay, well, I'm going to leave it." And it continued that way for some time. Eventually, I decided that I was going to reward my students with a lunch, not just one student, but all students, that I would personally buy a nicer lunch than the cafeteria lunch if the money stayed for the entire school year. I made up my mind that I was going to do this, so I started adding money to the board. And eventually, before you knew it, I took down some of the ones and I put up a $10 bill. When the $10 bill got up there, students were like, "Wait a minute, $10? Oh man, that's going to be gone soon, Bolden." But it wasn't. And before you know it, there was $14 up on the board. Occasionally, like, you know, if there was something where I was like, "Man, that student had a really good answer," I'd reach into my pocket and I'd pull out a dollar bill and just add it. And maybe once every 2 weeks, I'd add a dollar in. Now, about, I don't know, a week and a half ago, the money I took, $4 or $5 off the board, and just left the $10 bill up there to see how the students would react to money disappearing from the board. And that's when things got interesting. At that point in time, they said, "What, did somebody take that?" And I said, "What do you mean? Did somebody take some of the money, Mr. Bolden? There's only $10 up on the board now." I said, "Oh yeah, look at that. There's only $10. Do you care?" Now, I knew that I took the extra money off the board because I was wanting to see how this dealt with the temptation, how this maybe enticed others. If they thought somebody else had taken money, perhaps they would take the money as well. But the money remained. They did not eat the forbidden fruit from the tree of knowledge, so to speak, the story of Adam and Eve. They did not give in. So I started thinking, these are remarkable students. They are completely turning away from everything the news media and everybody else would say that they are. And I also know that there's probably some pretty hungry kids here that are going, "That $10 could be my meal later, and I won't have to worry about whatever is in the pantry when I get home." But yet they left it alone until I got to work. I got the work yesterday, and when I got in on Monday, I discovered that the money was gone, and I did not take the money off the board. Immediately, I was kind of filled with the sadness about thinking that something that had lasted almost 5.5 months was finally over. That something that I really wanted to treat the kids and show just how incredible they were and share this story about how the money stayed on the board the entire time, or a story about how a kid came to me and was like, "Hey, Bolden, can I get like $5 out of that? I'm having a tough time," and just giving the kid the $5 and going, "Yep, that's fine." I thought that this would actually give me like a great story, but no, that's not what happened. See, last week I was under the weather on Thursday and Friday. I was having some issues, and so I took 2 days off to get some tests done and go see the doctor. So I wasn't there Thursday and Friday, and apparently I had the same students both Thursday and Friday. It was a B day, and I was able to kind of get it down based upon the adults that aid for me that the money disappeared sometime on Thursday morning between 7:10 in the morning when students arrived and about 10:30 when that class came in and my adult noticed that the money was missing for me. And so I know that there is about 40 students that likely took this money. The question is, do I care? And the answer may shock you. See, I could care about the fact that this money was taken and it ruined a good experience and everything else. But I don't believe that's human nature. I think it's human nature to take the money. But I think what's more telling about the experience is the fact that when I think about the 40 plus students that could have taken the money from my classroom, or the substitute that could have taken the money from the classroom, because I don't rule that out either, immediately I start thinking, well, maybe it's this kid. Maybe it's that kid. And that is absolutely downright dangerous, because kids do not deserve. That does not go with my ethos of how I believe people to be. So instead today, when I had these students, because it's a Tuesday and I had those students, I told them a story, and I started off the class and I told the story that I will share with you now before, you know, kind of get into the second segment today. The story was that a long time ago, a man found a $20 bill. When he picked it off the ground, it was nice and crisp. He flipped it back and forth and he's like, "This must have fallen out of a banking teller or something. This is not mine. I'm going to take it to the police station." They get to the police station and the police say, "Sir, it's a $20 bill. You can keep it." And so he was rewarded and felt better about keeping it because he knew that he could have it. And so I said to my students after saying to the story, I said, "There's two things I want to share with you. The first was I planned on continuing to add to that money throughout the year. And I was going to do a food party for everybody if the money made it to the end of the year. And I had shared that with several people that that was my goal. So they kind of could back me up on that. Then I said, but the moral of the story is, I'm right now, you coming into the police office. Whoever took it, you're welcome to keep it. Thank you. I hope that you'll take that $10 and you'll invest it and make more than $10 from it and then reinvest into somebody else. Because life and this action is like standing at a lake and throwing a pebble into the body of water." And at this point, the students kind of looked at me a little bit confused. And I said, "Well, you've done that before. If you've ever skipped rocks or thrown a pebble into water, what happens?" And a few students responded, "It ripples." And I said, "And how far do the ripples go?" They said, "Well, the ripples continue on and on." I said, "Right, until they reach the shore. And then it disrupts the shore. What I want you to learn and understand today is that every action, no matter how small we may perceive it to be, ripples out and affects our neighbors in some way, shape, or form. Sometimes we're alongside that pebble and we get the big ripple. Other times we're on the other side of the lake and we barely feel it. But the point of the matter is, the temptation is felt by the entire community. So when one person out of all of us is being tempted and they give in and they do something that maybe we would judge that is something they shouldn't do, instead of realizing, oh my God, they've created a ripple, find a way to calm the waters. And so for me, calming the waters was realizing the money that was there the entire time was a huge success. It was success that even lasted 5.5 months, because these are kids that likely would really need that money. Some of my students, that would have been really important to them, and yet they didn't touch it. But when I was gone, somebody in a moment of weakness took the cash off the board. And I hope that with my message today to the overall majority of students that likely could have had an opportunity to take it, it was heard not as a judgment, but as me saying, yeah, you created a ripple today, but you're forgiven. Not only are you forgiven, but do better with what you have received and multiply it and give to others. What in our lives do we need to multiply and give to others? That's a lesson that I'm going to learn from. I'm glad that I did this. I hope that you're learning from it as well. And I wanted to begin today's show with something that had nothing to do with politics, had nothing to do with, you know, the average things that we normally talk about, because I really felt like this was a learning experience for me, my students, and now for you, my Bold American listeners. Now, speaking of $10, would you believe what I got at work the other day? You're going to want to hear this story. So I got a U.S. Census mailing that was in a rather large envelope in my teacher's mailbox while I was at work. And I was wondering, what is the U.S. Census Bureau doing sending me official paperwork to the school? And so as I'm walking down the hallway, I open this envelope up and I see a letter addressed from the U.S. Department of Education, from the Institute of Education Sciences, from the National Center for Education Statistics. And it's dated March 2024. And inside there is a orange piece of paper with a $10 bill staring at me. A $10 bill that was just mailed through the regular postal service. And I would have thought, gee, you know, this must be a rare thing. How did I get selected for this? Except I saw a fellow employee that dropped $10 about an hour later. And I said, did you get the survey too? And they said, yes, I got the Census Bureau survey. And I said, how many $10 bills did the Department of Education print out? You know, what type of money did they spend on this to get a survey of information? Now, I took it as a bribe in order to get me to take the survey, and I got news for the United States Census. I would have taken the survey either way. I appreciate the $10 as a token of your appreciation for my participation in the NTPS. That stated, I would have taken it anyway, and I'm sure more teachers would take this as well, because I found that the questions were actually thoughtful. It was a good survey of information. That stated, there's a part of this that made me very uncomfortable. So, two things that I'd like to point out. One, I don't believe the government should ever be offering free money for anything. If people want to do something, do it out of the goodness of your heart. You shouldn't need to get paid for just a quick survey and good information. And I have to wonder, at what taxpayer dollars did this money come out of, right? I believe from looking at this, it's about 10,300 people, the last time they sent it out, were selected for this. So if that's 10,000 people again, then it's only $100,000 that were spent. But then I gotta wonder, how many people are not going to take the survey that just got the $10 and they're like, well, thanks for the $10? And how much of that is absolutely wasteful spending by the Department of Education? And if they have that $100,000 to spend, plus you figure the mailing, the people that they paid the firm in order to do this, it's probably a $1 million study or more than that to get this type of information. So I got a tip for the DOE. Save your money. Just sincerely ask teachers for help and tell them why you need our help we're happy to share the feedback. But in your questions, I left a few things blank. And the reason I left a few of these answers blank is because it asked me about what type of money I made outside of education, outside of the school. And it asked that if I was making it as part of another education field or I was making income outside in other ways. Well, I have two other ways that I have some income. I have a very, very modest income, thanks to the supporters of the show on the Patreon page. And I also have a very, very modest income based upon doing real estate photography on the side. I go and I take photos for a few realtors, and it helps supplement my income a little bit. Because as a teacher, no, I'm not making six figures in the age of 45 like my colleagues are making in corporate America. And so I've always supplemented my income to try to make up some deficits. That stated, when you're asking me how much money I make photographing homes, how much money I make podcasting, I'm not going to answer a United States Census Bureau with that information. So I left that blank because it's none of your damn business, quite honestly. But I found that this is an interesting survey, talking about the school population we serve, professional development, talking about the way that we're evaluated. And I'm hopeful that in follow-up surveys that I can continue to give this feedback. So I'm honored that I was chosen because it sounds like out of a ton of educators, they only chose about close to just over 10,000. And so I don't know how many total educators there are throughout this country, but I know there's got to be probably over a million. So I'm pretty honored. And it said that I was chosen specifically because of what I teach. And I guess the background and makeup of the school and my classroom. So thank you. Thanks to whoever was like, you know what, that Greg Bolden guy, we want to get his opinion on things. Well, speaking of my opinion on things, I did a story about 2 months ago with a mortgage agent or a mortgage consultant. And I think that's the right word that I'm looking for. I don't know. A mortgage guy, mortgage broker, I don't know. The guy who gets you your mortgage when you need to buy a home. Anyway, Ben joined me from the mortgage side. And then I had Ryan join me from the real estate side. And we covered the NAR versus Burnett, the Stitzer-Burnett case. And I talked about how there was a $1.8 billion settlement that was going on. And what did that mean for residents? Well, guess what? The NAR has settled. They were originally going to appeal that, and they've now settled the case. And with the 480 some million that they settled, they did not have to settle for the full $1.8 billion. It's now basically, from the way I can tell, a class action lawsuit, a settlement of guilt, so to speak. Because immediately the lawyers for Burnett went after one of the largest companies in America. If you haven't heard about this yet, they went after Berkshire Hathaway's American Home Services at the tune of $4.8 billion. That is no small pocket change. Now, I had mentioned during this time that I thought that this could be good, it could be bad. It could be good from the standpoint of it means sellers might save a ton of money when they go to sell their home and make more. It could be good as well because it could force realtors that might have been more predatory on how much they wanted to charge to sell a home to have to give a better rate in order to sell a home. A lot of people believe that this might lead to a flat rate fee and almost a shop a la carte for your real estate agent in order to sell your home. However, here's where it screws people. It screws the buyers. Because now if the buyers do need to supplement their realtor, it's going to have to come from somewhere, that money. And what I believe it's going to end up bringing in is what I would call an unrepresented buyer. An unrepresented buyer is dangerous. Talk to anybody who's ever purchased a home from a new home developer, and you know just how downright dangerous that is because most people lose the ability to have some of their rights because the builder says, oh, don't worry, we're going to take care of that. But unless you're really watching over your shoulder for yourself, the builder and their settlement agent and the people that you're working with, they are not working your best interest. They're working to make the bottom line for the builder. So if you are a buyer that's getting affected by this, and the states are probably going to have to start responding now that the NAR has settled, see what happens to the Berkshire Hathaway company. This means that if you're a buyer, you're going to want to figure out what those representations look like for me. How can I become more educated on these issues? So just kind of keeping that in mind. And then there was another story that really blew my mind. I was shocked to see this one. If you haven't heard about it, the Illinois courts, they have ruled that the Second Amendment would apply to illegal immigrants. All right. So a judge ended up dropping gun charges against an illegal migrant, or as I like to call it, an illegal immigrant in Illinois, and stated that they had the protections of the Second Amendment. They dismissed the firearm possession charge against Heriberto Carabajal Flores, who was illegally and unlawfully in the United States when he possessed a handgun in the Little Village neighborhood in Chicago back on June 1st, 2020, certainly during the Summer of Love. And so the court found that his criminal record did contain no improper use of a weapon and had no nonviolence, and they said such that he cannot be trusted to use a weapon responsibly and should they be deprived of his Second Amendment right to bear arms in self-defense. Well, guess what? They said that he did have a right to have that weapon. In fact, it does not support a finding that he would pose a risk to safety, and therefore he should not be deprived of his Second Amendment right to bear arms in self-defense. Excuse me? Judge Coleman, you were appointed under President Barack Obama. You wrote this in your 8-page ruling back on March 8th. The story just broke yesterday. Can you explain to me how an illegal citizen, not a citizen, let me strike that from the record, because I think that's where you got confused. Explain to me how an illegal immigrant can have the protections of the Constitution. I'm not a constitutional attorney. I'm not going to claim to play one on my podcast either. I don't know enough about this. I need to immerse myself because this does not feel right. In fact, if anything, you should not have any of these protections unless you came in here legally, and I could understand you're in this country, it's this country's rules, but you're not a citizen, nor were you here legally. So how can you have the protections of the Second Amendment? I don't understand this. I'm hoping somebody can explain it to me. Maybe Paul Engel can do a show about this, because I am very confused as to how this ruling came about. So if you get a chance, you might want to check that out. It's pretty interesting. And this continues on in New York, too, with the whole whether or not you need proper cause to get a license to carry a firearm when you're outside your home. If you get a chance, go to that 2020-22 ruling, New York State Rifle and Pistol Association versus Bruin, Superintendent of New York State Police and others. That's a very important case. I was mentioning that just the other day when I was talking about the state of Delaware as well. And so in that court case, though, they said that the Second Amendment has plain text that covers person's conduct and therefore protects that conduct, according to Justice Clarence Thomas. And so they overruled and basically gave people the right to bear arms in New York in a landmark Supreme Court case. But what was that right for illegal people? Which I know I'm not allowed to say. If you're a leftist, you're not allowed to use the words illegal. So I'm supposed to say undocumented. I will start flagellating myself, hitting myself in the back now. Okay, that feels better. All right, I've succumbed for my sins of using the wrong words that the left needs me to use. Which, by the way, speaking of the left, I took some time to watch the Don Lemon interview of Elon Musk. Now, if you were following apparently Don was going to be joining the X family as one of the personalities there. And then Elon has since said, nope, I don't want you, because of the interview that Don did with him. This was perhaps one of the worst interviews I think I've ever watched. This is worse than waiting for paint to dry. There was no tact whatsoever by Don Lemon in his questioning of Elon. The way he jumped from one thing, it was accusatory over and over again. Elon, I felt, did a good job answering the questions. Don did a horrible job of actually listening. He was kind of looking down, I think, at his paper going, well, I'm just going to ask the next question, rather than listening and responding. And then by the end of the interview, Don was about 6 minutes over the hour that Elon had asked him to maintain. And he starts going into some more questions grilling Elon. And he goes, I would choose your next few questions very wisely before you continue. We only have 5 minutes. Elon has had enough. And Don continues on with it. And Elon becomes testy back and answers the questions. But basically, I think it was in those last 5 minutes when Don goes over time and then also continues to really ask questions that cannot be answered in 5 minutes. He answers questions that would take like another 20-minute segment. Elon says to him, I got people waiting in a room upstairs for me right now, and I need to have a meeting. So now you're down to 2 minutes. Do you want to ask that question or you want to go to something else? Wraps up the interview, and then he says, afterwards on X, when he went and he said, you know, no, we're not going to offer this to you, Don. You can publish this on the X platform and publish stuff wherever, but this isn't going to happen. Now, this also comes on the heels of a report that Don also brought Jeff Zucker, the former head of CNN, with him to the interview, which tells me that, you know, this is a controlled operation of an alternative media that's not so alternative. And I think that's what we've been trying to put, the mainstream alternative media, they've gotten wise. They know how to keep in front of your face in order to make sure that they don't lose the viewership that they want to have. And I don't know how else to point that out to people other than they continue to call it out whenever I see it. I think that's the important thing to do. And so that's what I'm doing. So if you get a chance, you can watch the Don Lemon thing on your favorite X app. But I got to be honest, I don't really think it matters. I would ignore it. Also, when Tucker Carlson went on to the X platform, he had about 25 million people watch one of his first shows. When I went to look at Don's content 24 hours after it was released, he had just gotten about 1.2 million views. So he's not doing well on this either. And I'm not telling you to go over there to boost his numbers. I'm just telling you, if you would like to see how the left is continuing to spin things, then watch the interview and then ask yourself whether or not you felt that that was a good interview by Don or it was an absolute crap show, as I believe it was. Now, one other thing has come out. I talked about TikTok and how the TikTok was going to be subject to possibly being removed in the United States thanks to Congress. It's now at the Senate. Seems to have some weird support in the Senate Finance Committee as well, but they're kind of currently going after Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin. I like calling him the Mnuchin. I don't know. It's spelled close enough, the Mnuchins, that it just, you know, now I'm hungry. I want Dunkin' Donuts. Anyway, they were going after his ties to the money in the Middle East because there's an effort right now to have people in Saudi Arabia purchase TikTok. Now, what does this mean if TikTok gets purchased? And what does this mean for the bill? Now, if they move quickly on this bill, I told you, what's in the bill is not about TikTok. Sure, it's about trying to get it 6 months sold or banned from the app stores, but it's really about the surveillance of all the information of anyone that uses a social media website with over 1 million users. And so if they pass the bill, And then Saudi Arabia purchases TikTok. It's not going to change anything. They're still going to monitor. So this is just smoke and mirrors. What I discovered is this really isn't about China. You know, if it was about China, then they would keep it straight and to the point and say, hey, you know what? We're basically at war with this country, what they're getting ready to do with Taiwan. You know, we got troops that are stationed literally off the coast of China at this point. If you didn't see that story, that was big a few days ago. Should TikTok be controlled by United States investors? Well, I don't know. Do you believe in capitalism or do you not believe in capitalism? I guess that's the larger story there. So I thought that that one was an interesting one that I wanted to cover briefly here as well. I think that's it. I'm probably going to call the show a day here. One other thing. I saw that there was a study that just came out saying that fasting was linked to an increase of heart attacks. I'm convinced at this point in time that if you want to find some type of correlation in these studies, there's people paying for it. Because when I've researched fasting and when I've listened to other doctors talk about it, they say for many people, fasting is actually healing because it's helping reset the body by doing this time-restricted eating. But now they're saying a surprising new study says that intermittent fasters were more likely to die of heart disease. They found people who adhered to the 8-hour eating plan had a 91% higher risk of death from heart disease compared to people who followed a more traditional dietary pattern of eating their food across 12 to 16 hours each day. And so they found that this increased risk also applied to people who are already living with a chronic disease or cancer. I think it's an interesting study. I have a lot of questions about how they went about getting the information. And I think you should too. Look, all these fads, all these things that everybody's trying to sell us, ultimately, I think I come at things often as a healthy skeptic. I like to ask questions about, but I gotta be honest, like fasting does make sense to me, but I guess, you know, if you're diabetic and fasting, yeah, that could be pretty damaging to your heart. And perhaps maybe we're just so addicted to sugar in this country that maybe that's what's causing the heart disease. So you see what I mean? Like, I feel like there's other factors in this story that are being left out. All right, let me just quickly tell you about what I have coming up at the end of the week here. So maybe by the time you're listening to the show, it's already been live, but I will, maybe it's coming up. 4 p.m. Wednesday, March 20th, which is today, the day that this is coming out. I'm doing a live show, as I said, with Dr. McCullough. It will be on the network almost immediately after as well, given that the Malcolm to get out there, as well as all my platforms. Once again, if you want to support my work directly, go to patreon.com/AmericaEmboldened. You can become a subscriber, get some benefits, get some content before everybody else, as well as get some exclusive content from time to time as well. So help support the show there. And then at the end of the week, I'm having Ken Block join me. I'm going to be interviewing him on Thursday for Friday's show. And Ken wrote the book Disproven. And Ken was hired by Donald Trump in order to find election integrity interference with the 2020 vote. You're definitely going to want to hear that interview because that's a guy that has absolute inside information to share. Hope I honored your time well. Looking forward to these shows coming up, and thank you for sticking with me. As I said at the beginning of the show, if you have not subscribed to the YouTube page, Rumble page, type in America Emboldened. Give me a subscribe. That would be very helpful in the growth of the show, and follow on all social media platforms where you like to get your content. Have a great rest of your day, everybody. You've listened to America Emboldened with Greg Bolden. Be bold, America.